Chapter 9. Jesse had made it through rehab pretty easily. He hadn't done it on discipline alone, on his ability to simply shut off his drinking for long periods. For his own sake, he knew he couldn't afford to act the part of cleaning himself up, and that, for lack of a better expression, he had to let it all hang out. He had been open with the shrinks, with the counselors, and with the groups about destroying his career in L.A., and about his tangled and doomed relationships with women. He'd even gotten some laughs from the others in the group when he explained that he'd got the job as chief of police in Paradise not because he'd been a good detective, not in spite of being a drunk, but because he was one. Until today, Jesse hadn't given much thought to his arrival in Paradise almost 2 decades ago, but the brutal assault on Felicity Wildford couldn't help but cause him to reflect on those early days. And he had plenty of time for reflection on his drive down to Boston. One of the things he'd been told over and over again while in rehab was that he needed to go to AA meetings every night, that he had to find a sponsor, and to do it sooner rather than later. Dix had made the same point to him when Jesse had called from the road on his way back from rehab. "You got through this part, Jesse," Dix had said. "Good for you." That was as close as Dix had ever come to an attaboy, and probably as close as he would ever come. But he didn't stop there. It might be more of a challenge once you get home in familiar surroundings, and you can't depend on me for reinforcement. You've got to go to meetings and be with other alcoholics. They're your tribe, Jesse. They're your people, and they're the ones you need to rely on. You've got to find a sponsor. It made sense to Jesse, and he felt Dix was right, though the thought of standing up in front of a room of drunks and telling his story gave him pause. It was one thing to be in rehab for a few weeks with complete strangers, people he would likely never have contact with again. It was something else to do it close to home, when there was every chance he could run into these folks during the day. Although his alcoholism wasn't exactly a secret in Paradise, he had, for the most part, limited his public displays of drunkenness, and he had missed work only a few times because of his drinking. Still, he felt he couldn't risk a meeting in Paradise, Swan Harbor, Salem, or any of the other close-by towns. Dix had anticipated Jesse's reaction. "Your default setting is self-reliance, Jesse. Some people can pull it off by themselves, but it would be a mistake for you. You've tried it that way before, and it's never worked. So if you're worried about the discomfort of a meeting in or around your town, drive down to Boston." There were meetings all over Boston, but Jesse had chosen one in the basement of an Episcopal church in Cambridge. He supposed he'd chosen the meeting there because he used to look at the church steeple from Diana's bedroom window, and just lately he had finally been able to think of her and smile again. Some memories were of her and her alone, or of their time together. Memories free of his grief and guilt over her murder. He was a few minutes late, but no one did more than give him a cursory glance as he came into the room. To them, he was just another drunk. A guy in his early 30s, with a shaved head and a mustacheless beard, and wearing a beat-up leather jacket, was in front of the room telling his story. Jesse cringed. This part of the meetings, the public confessional stuff, was anathema to him. It was too self-indulgent for his taste. Even when he was in the minors, Jesse hated public displays by other ballplayers meant to draw the crowd's attention to them. He never flipped his bat after a home run or stood at the plate admiring his handiwork. He hustled around the bases as if trying to beat out a bunt. He tried never to pump his fist or to celebrate or pout in front of others. There were several parts of the 12 steps that cut hard against Jesse's self-contained nature. Though he had begun to compile the list of people to whom he had done wrong and to whom he would have to apologize. It was a long list. Some were his old partners from his time in robbery homicide in L.A. Molly, Suit, and Alicia were on the list too. Sadly, many of the people on the list were in the ground and beyond his apologies. Jesse found a folding chair in the next-to-last row, between an old-timer and a 20-ish woman with cropped brown hair, piercings, and tattoos covering most of her pale white skin. The old-timer had a resigned look on his face. Jesse could tell he'd been listening to fellow drunks tell their stories for many years, and he didn't find the current saga of alcohol-fueled misjudgments very engaging or original. Been there, done that. Bought the t-shirt. The woman, on the other hand, was very focused on the guy at the rostrum. Her right leg was shaking like mad, and she was doing this thing with her fingers, rubbing them together as fast as she could, so that they made a shushing sound. When the guy up front was done with his story, he got a scattered round of applause. A very attractive woman in her early 40s with expensively coiffed auburn hair, dressed in a well-tailored blue business suit, replaced the guy at the front of the room. She thanked him for sharing. She then invited other people up to share. When no one volunteered, she said she had to make a few announcements. "Bill," the old-timer to Jesse's left said, offering his right hand. "First time here, huh?" Jesse shook Bill's hand. "First time, period. This part gets easier. Don't share if you don't want to tonight, but sharing helps. You'll see." "Not your first time?" Jesse asked, knowing the answer. Bill laughed. "Nope, I'm an old hand at this. I go to different meetings. It does me good to move around from time to time, to hear new stories." When the room got quiet, Bill stood and walked to the front of the room. "Hi, my name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic." "Hi, Bill," most of the audience answered back. Jesse pictured himself up there saying those words, and his belly knotted for the second time that day.